Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for faith builders. You'll find daily good news reflections on the Scriptures of Mass, written by Terry Modica, to help you in your everyday life and struggles. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Go again. This should be good.
I know that my salad was only $22, and I only drank water.
If Greg whips out that calculator, I will be absolutely mortified.
And that's my cue.
Why am I the only one who takes the time to figure it out?
I'm just paying the whole check. Maybe next time, Miss Only Had a Salad can pay for it.
Okay, so fill in this blank. The topic of money makes me feel. What emotions immediately surface? A few weeks ago, we put out this question to a random sampling of people in the community. The topic of money makes me feel. And here are some of the answers that we got. The topic of money makes me feel stressed. I don't know what's happening in the economy. You hear so many different things. The topic of money makes me feel anxious to make more. I need more. The topic of money makes me feel guilty because I'm a spender and it's creating tension in my marriage. The topic of money makes me feel ashamed because I have so much and so many have so little. The topic of money makes me feel jealous because I have so little and so many have so much. The topic of money makes me feel confused. There are just so many causes and needs and requests out there. The topic of money makes me feel inadequate because I have not handled it well so far. The topic of money makes me feel worried that I won't have enough to take care of myself or the needs of my family, worried that I might outlive my money. The topic of money makes me feel annoyed. It's none of your business how I feel about money. Notice that of all of the feelings people shared, none of them were positive feelings. It's not necessarily a positive topic to talk about money. We know we need it. We obviously want it. We think about it. We think about it a lot. We think about it all the time sometimes, but we don't want to obsess about it. We work for it. Perhaps we work hard. We've earned what we've got. We deserve what we have. But it's hard to reconcile what we have with all of the poverty around the world. Most of us try and use it wisely and well, and most of the time we do, and then sometimes we don't. We find ourselves spending in foolish ways and feeling foolish as a result. We want to be secure and take care of our family. We want our kids to have every advantage money can buy, but we do not want to overindulge them. We want to be comfortable and live well. We want to be thought of as living well and comfortable, but we think about being generous too, and that's a lot to think about. So it's little wonder we might sometimes feel conflicting feelings, even negative emotions when it comes to money. And then, of course, when you bring the topic up in church, well, That's just like throwing gasoline on a bonfire. Most of us have not, absolutely have not had good experiences of hearing about money in church, far from it, and engendering even more negative emotions like annoyance and anger. Often church fundraising appeals rely on guilt to motivate people. In many parishes, multiple fundraisers happening simultaneously sow confusion about who to support or where to give. And as preached from the pulpit, the sum total of the church's message on money comes across as, we need more, period. That was my experience as a kid growing up. The parish my family attended had built a new church and incurred an enormous debt as a result that they struggled to service. And so over a number of years, the pastor, with increasing frequency, appeared in the pulpit in place of the homily to ask, implore, plead, beg, guilt, and finally demand more money. Got so bad, I stopped going to church. It's true. I told my mother that if the sum total of the church's message was, we need more money, I was not interested, and I was not going. I stopped going to church. When I was in high school, I did not go to church. So, if you have a high school student at home who doesn't want to go to church, don't worry. It could work out for you. Actually, encourage them to try out our high school program, Uprising, which is now on Sunday afternoons at 4. No, sign up, just show up, bring a friend. It is an amazing program. Anyway, today, we're launching a brand new message series for a new season, the fall season, called Right on the Money. All those negative emotions about money, all those negative experiences about money in church are exactly why most pastors actually don't want to talk about money at all, myself included. For a long time, I didn't, and that was wrong of me, because Jesus talked about money. Jesus talked about money all the time. He had more to say about money than he had to say about religion, about the church, about marriage and family life, about heaven and hell. He had more to say about money than any other topic. Besides which, in his parables, those stories he used in his preaching and teaching, in parable after parable, he used money to illustrate his point, as we'll see in a moment. He talked about money because he knows how much stress and tension it can cause in our lives and in our relationships, especially in marriage, the number one cause of divorce. He talked about money because he knows how easily worry and concern for it dominates our thoughts and directs our lives. He talked about money all of the time because he knows how love for it can hold our hearts. Jesus understood the real value and the proper place of money and what place it should have in our lives. And just like every other issue, everything Jesus teaches about money is for our benefit and our welfare. So he taught about money, but he never once asked for it. That's because when it comes to your finances, Jesus doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you. And so, as we begin this series, it's important for me to emphasize that there is no ask coming at the end of this series. There's no gotcha. We're not using this series to launch a capital campaign, run a stewardship program, or raise money. You can relax, sit back, and let go of your wallet, because we're not raising any money in this series. This is not about raising money. It's about getting money right. Because. And here's the point. Here's the whole series in a sentence. I'll give it to you all right up front. How we handle money and how we follow Jesus go hand in hand. How we handle money and how we follow Jesus go hand in hand. Today we're going to take a look at that point by looking at a key principle to getting money right. Everything else that Jesus teaches about money flows from this principle. It's a principle perhaps you'll push back on or even resist, but you might find yourself agreeing with me once I make my case. And to look at it, we're going to look at a passage from the Gospel of Luke. Jesus is in the midst of his ministry. He's traveling around. People are following him, and he's teaching them. And at one point, he teaches them in this rather unexpected way. He says, "If anyone comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple." So, in fact, great crowds are following Jesus. People liked him. People who were nothing like him liked him. And in this instance, he challenges them. He says, it's one thing to just follow me around and listen to my preaching and teaching. It's another thing entirely to step up and make a commitment. Same for us, I suppose. You can come to church. You can come to church week after week because you like the music, you like to listen to the message, your kids like the kids' programs. That's good. That's fine. And if that's you today, if you're checking out church for the first time in a long time or the first time ever, if you don't even consider yourself a church person, you're just circled back around to give it another try. If that's you today, great. Welcome. We're glad you're here. All of us start out in the crowd, and if that's where you're comfortable right now, that's fine with us. But Jesus says there's another level. There's a next level, and it's called discipleship. What's that? Well, disciple is a student. And in this case, a disciple is simply a student of Jesus Christ. Disciples get to know the Lord in a personal way, talking to him and listening to him daily, and more, centering more and more of their lives on his teaching. Disciples are not perfect people. They're not saints. They're just students. And it turns out there are conditions or requirements for discipleship. And he names three in this passage we're looking at. The first one apparently is we have to hate our families. Now, somebody out there might be thinking, that's easy. But by hate, Jesus does not mean an intense negative emotion of anger or malice. Obviously, he would not be coaching us in that direction. He does not use the word as we understand it. Instead, this is a figure of speech, a deliberate exaggeration to make a point. In that culture at that time, to hate could just mean to take from first place and put into second place. So he's saying, if you want to be my disciple, first of all, you need to put all of your relationships behind me. You need to put your relationship with me in first place. Then he goes on with another condition, a second condition. He says, whoever does not carry his cross cannot be my disciple. In our day, the cross is a symbol of faith and even consolation and comfort. We wear it on chains. We hang it on walls. We put it on buildings. In Jesus' day, the cross was a violent symbol of suffering and death. He's saying, if you want to be my disciple, you're going to have to sacrifice, maybe even suffer some. People naturally have themselves at the center of their lives. Disciples have Christ at the center of their lives. The next to illustrate his point, he uses one of those money illustrations that we were referring to. He says, which of you, wishing to construct a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if there is enough money for completion? So he's saying that we should calculate the cost. We should be aware of the cost of discipleship. The image he uses is of a building project. He's saying it's common practice, it's prudent practice to sit down and calculate if you're going to have enough money to pay for what you propose to build. Otherwise, Otherwise, after laying the foundation and finding himself unable to finish the work, the onlooker should laugh at him and say, "This one began to build but did not have the resources to finish." Just makes sense as a life lesson, not to mention as an economic lesson, to count the cost of the project before beginning. So he's saying, if you want to just be in the crowd because you come to church because you like the music and you like to listen to the message and your kids like the kids' programs, that won't cost you anything. But if you want to be my disciple, that's going to cost you something. Count them. Count the cost. One, you've got to put me above all your other relationships. Two, you've got to put me above yourself and your self-interest. And third thing, any one of you who does not renounce all his possessions cannot be my disciple. Right up there with our family relationship and our self-interest is our money and our stuff. And he says, anyone who does not renounce all his possession cannot be my disciple. Renounce my possessions. What does that mean? Give all my stuff away? Maybe. But not necessarily. We should hear that word renounce the same way Jesus intends us to hear the word hate. Make money, and all the stuff money buys, at best, second, or third, or fourth, to a relationship with Jesus Christ. See your money, how you earn it, have it, hold it, use it, spend it, and share it as an expression of following Christ. That's it. That's the whole deal. But I don't want to oversimplify, and I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver as we kick off this series. The issue of money is never going away. You know that. I know that. Jesus knows that too. In fact, he wants his friends and followers to live in the tension between needing money and growing as a disciple. He also wants us to learn to use money as a tool to love God, love others, and make disciples. So as we begin this journey together, because each message series is a little journey for our parish, as we begin this journey, there are a few commitments I'm going to encourage you to make. In fact, three. First, this week for your homework, take some time in your quiet time to consider what's the number one negative emotion you experience when it comes to money. Stress, guilt, jealousy, worry. Be honest about what it is. Start thinking about how that feels and how it would feel not to feel that feeling. Second, commit to this series. Commit to coming back each weekend of this series here on our Ridgely Road campus or our online campus. Also, consider who else needs to hear this message, who else you can share this message with. We live stream all of our Sunday masses and rebroadcast throughout the day. And if all else fails, you can watch the weekend message anytime on demand online. But third thing, make sure you're here in person in 2 weeks, September 21st and 22nd. Our new book, Church Money, is going to be released that weekend by Ave Maria Press at Notre Dame University, and we're very excited about that because the book offers a wider, deeper perspective on what Scripture says and what we need to know about money than we could possibly provide from the pulpit. So we really want you to read the book. In fact, we want you to read the book so much, we're going to give it to you. We're going to give you a free copy of the book, thanks to an anonymous donor who has purchased thousands of copies. We'll be giving books away after Mass the weekend of September 21st and 22nd, but you've got to be here to get your free copy. The books are free, but discipleship is not. There's a cost to following Jesus, and there are benefits as well. And that's what we're focusing on in this series. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, you don't have time for the comparison trap that makes you feel jealous of what others have that you don't. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, you don't have to feel guilty, because the Lord leads us out of and away from all guilt. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, you don't have to worry about money, because the Lord teaches us that worry is useless, and prayer in its place can be powerful. When focused on following Jesus instead of money, you know what? You are not a spendthrift or a tightwad. You're not a consumer or a saver. You're not rich or poor. You are not defined by your money. You're defined by your relationship with Christ.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.